Talk given Sunday, 23rd March, 1975. One cannot overemphasize the fact that the religious life must not be regarded as something separate from one's daily life. But the nature of religious living is the very antithesis of the nature of worldly living. Life is the whole process of life in this world and nowhere else. There is no else. There is no elsewhere. It is here that we live. But we can live in the world as worldlings in terms of trying to draw the whole world unto ourselves. In short, to live self-centeredly. Or we can utterly transform our stance, our approach and our attitude to the whole of life by living not unto ourselves, but unto the totality of which we are integral part and portion. It is this which completely transforms the quality of our daily life from that of worldliness, of subhumanity, into the truly human life, which is identical with the religious life. All the world has its own concepts of what it means to be human. And these concepts are all far short of the truth. To be human means to be the one in whom evil-mindedness and, in association with that, all evil action is utterly eliminated. It is burnt out. It is transmuted into the absolute good which is beyond definition and beyond ordinary conception. That is the meaning of the word human. The human being is a happy creator. We are in the subhuman state. We live unto ourselves. We want to get something out of life, to express ourselves, as we say, as if there was anything in us at all to express. We are under this tremendous delusion that we have this, that and the other gift or quality or whatever it may be. The fact is that it is the cosmos itself which contains us so completely and utterly, which is gifted infinitely, and it expresses its own gift and marvel and beauty through particular individuals, whose business it is to serve the cosmos in such a manner that the gift or the gifts of the cosmos come to fruition through oneself being the faithful and good servant of the cosmos. It's a totally different outlook and attitude. You can see at a glance that if this difference comes about, all our life in the world, political, economic, social, and in every other form in which we express, cultural, and in every other form in which we live our life, will undergo a complete change. We have seen mankind through the ages suffer because of his ignorance his folly, his incapacity, his conceit, his greed and hate and delusion and violence and fear and everything. We have seen no fulfillment in the true sense, with the rare exception of those who saw into the deeps, who disciplined themselves, who understood the nature of reality, understood the purpose of their existence, and living in tune with that vision and understanding, had become the perfected holy ones. I know that in the modern world it has become fashionable to look down upon religion and morality and purity and goodness as dirty words, as so many will say. The fact is that neither the words nor what the words represent are dirty. It's the people who say they are dirty words who are dirty. That's the simple fact of the matter. They are dirty in their minds, they are dirty in their hearts. This does not call for condemnation, but for understanding, for compassion. Not a condescending compassion, but a true compassion. Compassion which arouses seriousness, a deep seriousness in our own minds. A tremendous sense of alertness as to the actual realities with which life presents us. Now we know that one of the outstanding features in all the religious teachings of the world is the emphasis laid first and foremost upon the moralities, the commandments, if you like to call them, the sealers, the precepts, the advices, use whichever word you like. But they all mean one thing and one thing alone. They mean the observing of the simple rules of conduct in body, in speech, and in mind and feeling, which mark the true humanity in our own nature. That comes first. It is, if you like, the purification of the heart. Associated with that is the purification of the mind. As one tries to live the good life, one grows in understanding the meaning of the moralities. What is the real meaning of harmlessness, of being truthful, of refraining from theft, or murder, from senseless self-indulgence, and so on. The simple moralities. One learns to understand their real meaning. And as one understands their real meaning, we discover that we become free of all our old fixed ideas, definitions, beliefs, convictions, all our mental fixations, all our conditioning deep down in the depths of our own mind. We become free of all that. And as our biases, prejudices, preconceptions, assumptions, and so forth, none of which have any warrant in reality, in truth, as they disappear, the mind becomes clear, not confused, not subject to delusion. Until then, we are bound in this subhuman state. Now this freedom from delusion, this purity of the mind and the heart, is not something which can be acquired in fixed terms by means of defining what they all are. What we have to be free of, in fact, is the definition of these things. Because in their reality, in their ultimate reality, they are transcendental. They are not relative. That which is limited and relative is defined. That which is transcendental, which is universal, which is the great truth, the reality of our existence and so forth, is the illimitable, the immeasurable, the indefinable. You can't make pictures of it. Those pictures are the things which bind, and so forth. So now, becoming free of this state of delusion means that intelligence, in the true sense, begins to function. And intelligence, in the religious sense, means being able to be so sensitive that one is fully aware of the truth in the immediate here now of what the senses perceive. The truth of the actual situation, of what is actually happening. We see it free from our own conditioning, free from the limiting, distorting influence of our own desires, our own greed, our own grasping, our own passions, our own longing to experience pleasure. We become free of all that. When this freedom of the mind and the heart grows within us, comes into being, then we have reversed our subhuman condition. The worldly state is now transformed into the religious state. In the worldly state, it is not thy will, O Lord, but mine which ought to be done. That's the worldly outlook, and that is exactly how the thousands of millions of human beings live. That has to undergo this complete reversal. And one lives according to the will of the Supreme. One has to use these phrases, which are limiting phrases, admittedly. But if we try to communicate by speech at all, we cannot avoid these phrases. And the will of the Supreme is not given to you from outside. Supposing it were given to you from outside, in a book, by word of mouth, then it is your mind, in any case, which is interpreting the word. And because the interpreter himself is worldly, is faulty, is confused, ignorant, he will naturally misinterpret the word. So you see, it is only from within that this wisdom emerges. And it emerges because there is the actuality of the purification of the mind and the heart taking place all the time. Then the beauty and the truth, the perfection of the revelation is uncovered for you from within yourself. It does not and it cannot come from outside. What can come from outside is the stimulus, the presence of a person, what he says, his actual personal life, that is the most powerful influence. That can stimulate any one of us. And the stimulus can be such that if we are sensitive, and if we really care for that which is most worthwhile caring about, then we shall know from within. Now these are the early steps. The early steps which in their culmination lead to saintship. And with saintship is the beginning, not the end, not the goal of the spiritual life, the religious life, the truly human life. Such a person is truly a happy creator, the human being, one in whom evil-mindedness is burnt out. Now we have considered these matters year after year. Have we ever glimpsed what is the nature, the condition, the state of the person who has realized, who is human? Consider for a moment how we live. We live in a state of separation. We are conscious of the world, of persons and objects as something other than us. This is the fundamental duality, the root of conflict, and conflict will be endless as long as that duality prevails. This, to use Christian language, is the original sin. We are in this sinful state because we are separate in our inner consciousness. That is why we want to take from the world. But when this changes and we give ourselves to the totality, to transcendence itself, which is not a something other than the totality. Otherwise it would be a limited, finite something, and transcendence is not limited or finite, which can be thought about and talked about like that. If we really give ourselves to it and we become part of it, we are in the state of communion. Now, what actually happens in the life, the daily life of the man in communion? If I look at an object, as an ordinary man of the world, I see that object as something separate from myself. This is a chair, that is a house. This is a stone or whatever it is. I see it as something different from me. Of course, materially, it has its own separate, finite existence. That is perfectly true. But if I'm in the state of communion, how do I see it? I will first say that I don't see it in the ordinary meaning of those words. There is an act of seeing taking place. There is a process of seeing taking place between me, a living being, and the object, or it may be a person or whatever it is. An act of seeing is taking place. And in that act of seeing, there is involved seeing in the ordinary, everyday, worldly manner, as this particular person, this particular object, and so forth. But there is something immensely greater than that too involved in it all. In that act of seeing, through my eyes, it is not a separate eye which sees, but transcendence itself sees the object, the person, the situation or whatever is being seen. So that the seeing contains the ordinary worldly seeing, but in addition to it, integrated with it, is this transcendent vision. It is eternal God looking through my eyes. These eyes in here in this body are, in the ordinary way, my eyes. But if this person is the pure one, the perfected holy one, then through these eyes, it is not this separate person only who sees, but eternal God looks through and sees himself in the object or the person which is seen. Now, do feel this sensitively. Just be sensitively aware. Don't question. Don't let the intellect start disturbing your whole being. You have to be at one with it. You see, in the ordinary way, as far as the religious life is concerned, it is said that man seeks God. But it is infinitely truer to say that God approaches man in order that through man God sees himself in his totality. If you want to use impersonal terms, the one total reality, the absolute total reality, comes to self-knowledge, self-awareness, through your eyes, through your ears, through your sense of touch, your feelings, your thoughts, and everything. But those feelings and thoughts have to be so pure, so perfect, that you, the instrument, will not break under the strain, under the impact of this transcendent totality. You see? Now, do you begin to understand why in the Old Testament it is said, no man may see God and live? It has two meanings, at least two meanings. No man may see God and continue to live as a worldling. Quite impossible. If he tries to, if the intellect has stormed the ramparts of heaven, then somewhere, somehow, that organism will break under the strain. Because the tremendous conflict set up by the release of supernatural power into a vehicle which is impure will smash the vehicle, just like an electric current at a very much higher voltage than the bulb will stand, will just break the bulb, that's all. So that's one meaning. No man may see God and live. He cannot live as a worldling anymore. Either he has to be completely transformed and continue to live, or he will perish. See? So you've got the two meanings there. No man may see God, but that he will live divinely. That is why the Son of Man, the Manasaputra, as we say in India, is identical with the Brahmaputra, the Son of God. Putra means son. And we have that in Christian teaching too. If only that could be realized in its deepmost sense, this whole world, as far as mankind is concerned, would be completely transformed. Today, man is the supreme predator. He is the supreme destroyer of this Garden of Eden in which he has been placed. This would undergo total transformation. So now, through your eyes, the divine looks out. But you have to let the divine look out through your eyes. And you can let the divine look out through your eyes only if there is this purity. Purity of mind, purity of heart. And with it, the total giving of self, of the personal self to the totality. Which means an attentiveness, a mindfulness of such a nature that you are never out of relationship, full, complete relationship with the totality. What is it that spoils the relationship? First and foremost, every consciousness of separation, which is associated always with aversion, with turning away from, which in turn is associated with violence, with destruction, with hate, with jealousy, anger, envy, ill will, malevolence, and all these things. You see, we as we are, poor, incapable mortals, we have no conception of the deep, profound meanings of the simple realities. Reality is simple. But we, being not simple, being complicated, we are in this ill state, as the Buddha said. And therefore, the world of man is what it is today. But this is the nature of the state of communion. A state in which there is complete, full relationship between yourself and your total environment. That is one thing. Now, when that sort of relationship is there, that sort of alertness and sensitivity, the clamor of the self has absolutely ceased. And it is the music of life, the song of life, which begins to sing, to sound through you, the person. And its sound is silence. And the movement of that music is stillness. A stillness which is your whole being vibrating in tune with the infinite. Just vibrating in tune. And if you are vibrating in tune like that, you have ceased to be an obstruction to the flow of eternal life. You have ceased to be an opaque block shutting out the light of transcendence itself. And you are quiet then. Quiet so that the clamor, the noise of all the speech that goes on silently in our mind and of practically all the speech that we utter aloud in our everyday life, all that ceases. Because you will notice that wheresoever there is speech, as I'm talking now, you'll notice it, the words I and you are bound to come in. We cannot get away from the separative terms I, you. All that will cease. You're in harmony. Then mind bridges over to mind, and heart speaks to heart without anything between them. And this is the state of continuous, harmonious relationship. Is this not perhaps something like the true nature of love in its transcendence, in its reality? When this can happen, when heart and mind is responding and corresponding all the time in this manner? Is this not also the play of wisdom, the wisdom that has gone completely beyond all that we commonly know as worldly wisdom? Something like this is associated with this state of communion. And it is a condition of revelation. A continuous revelation, a ceaseless revelation. Because revelation in its reality, which emerges from within yourself, is of the nature of eternity and has nothing to do with time. The time process. Time as time is there in universal process. But when my consciousness is caught up in time, it is caught up with birth and death, with sorrow and with separation. But if I transcend that in my own mind and consciousness, I am one in eternity. There is no otherness for this person whose mind is freed in this manner. Everything which is other in the ordinary sense is the one whole reality. This being the case, another very extraordinary thing happens in this state of constant communion. When through your eyes transcendence sees the object or the person, not only do you see the finite, not only is the finite seen, but the infinite embodied in the finite is present simultaneously. When therefore transcendence sees a physical object through your eyes, the whole of materiality, the entire material cosmos, is seen simultaneously in it. You must let the mind dwell on this statement. Don't try to grasp at some wonderful transcendental experience or result. It will come by itself, the gift of God, the gift of transcendence. By grace it will come. But if you can get this, you will find an extraordinary transformation take place in your whole being. When you look at the particular object, you will be looking at the total material universe. When you look at a particular person, you will be seeing all humanity at the same time. And if you see all humanity, and remember the deep meaning of the word human, evil-mindedness burnt out the happy creator, you will see God embodied standing there before you, if you are capable of seeing it. You have heard me use this phrase often and often, that each one of us is transcendence embodied. This is not a poetic fancy, or just being carried away by a gift for words or ideas. Not at all. This is simple fact. Transcendence is embodied here. In each and every one of us, it is embodied in each and every thing which the senses can grasp or which the mind can perceive through sheer logic or whatever it is. Transcendence is embodied in it all. But it is the business of the manifestation not to hide, to imprison that transcendence. This is the power we do have. It is our business to let it shine through, unhindered. When you yourself are still and silent, when you yourself, because of your own inner purity, are such that there is no conditioning within you, no grasping, which distorts and spoils the life process from functioning utterly freely through you, then you are transcendence embodied, which you, in your ordinary everyday consciousness, will be constantly aware of. This has to be realized. Made real through the purification, through the attentiveness, through the intensity of your unselfing. You know what the Buddha said in one of the discourses? You'll find it in the first volume of the Majjhima Nikaya. He's talking to somebody who is obviously one of the clever fellows of the world. And the clever fellow questions him and questions him. And there comes the point when the Buddha says quite openly and simply that he, the Buddha, lives constantly in this transcendent condition. He says, I compose my mind and dwell in the shunyata phala samadhi, in which I constantly abide. Whether he's asleep, whether he's awake, he lives in that state. He lives effortlessly, naturally in that state. Why effortlessly and naturally? Because there is the perfected human, the Holy One, the whole one, the integrated one, the true individual, complete within himself and complete with in relationship to the total cosmos. These are the deep meanings involved in such words. Shunyata, the emptiness, the void. Phala, the fruit of. Samadhi, the state of complete, the supreme communion that man can ever know. So, the shunyata, phala, samadhi, the supreme communion which is the fruit of the void, the emptiness. What is this? What is the meaning of this void, this emptiness? Conventional orthodox people have spun wonderful cobwebs of words and ideas in connection with it. The simple truth about the void is just this. You yourself, I myself, am voided of all ill, all greed, delusion, violence, stupidity, fear, self-seeking, and so forth. That is the meaning of saying, when that has been realized, that is the meaning of saying, this is void. It doesn't mean that you haven't got an elbow or a toenail or a head or whatever it is. All that is there, void of ill. That is its first and fundamental, its middle and its final meaning. You can bring all sorts of other things into it if you like. But get hold of this first. This communion is the fruit of being voided, cleansed of all ill. So now, you see the significance of man, of you, of myself. Through each and every one of us, God sees, hears, touches, tastes, thinks, feels, responds, is awake and conscious in the manner in which you and I are awake and conscious, but transcendentally so. This is our destiny. This is what it means to be a human. And then all the wonderful words we use, such as love, truth, wisdom, purity, beauty, all those words have at last come to life in their fullness. They are lit up. This, which I have tried to present in these somewhat halting words, is something of the nature and the condition of the state of communion, the state which is the full human state. This is the fruition, the climax of religious living. It is the climax. And it is something which is not an attainment. It is not as if you get there after 20 years of striving and toiling and moiling and then say, ah, I've done it. I have done nothing whatsoever. It is because I have ceased to do that the transcendent real takes this manifestation of it, myself, into itself. Now you'll understand. And the manhood was taken up into the Godhead. Man cannot seize hold of the Godhead and put it into himself. It is this totality, the supreme, the ultimate real, which takes you up. Because at last one is free of the wall of separation, of the cruelty, the evil of selfness. One is free of it. And therefore, this wonderful thing happens. What then will happen to all our problems, as we call them? What is our relationship to the problems that beset us then? The individual human being can become like that. But all human beings are endowed with freedom of choice. Perhaps that is not the best way to put it. It may be better to say that every human being, by virtue of his psychophysical constitution, by virtue of the fact that he can look within himself and recognize self as embodied in him, has the power to say no or to say yes to the supreme truth. He can deny the supreme truth, the supreme fact. If he does, it will hurt him and he will live and die unredeemed. That is to say, waste paper basket material. That is the fact. But if he realizes, he will also suffer, whether he realizes or doesn't realize, because there is so much all around which is different from him, and which injects poison into the psychical atmosphere and wrong action into the physical world as such. So that will hurt. And it must hurt. If it doesn't hurt, he is no holy one. Because that intense sensitivity to all suffering, to all evil, has to be there. Otherwise, what am I awake to? There is no need for me to be awake. I can go to sleep. I can say, I've done my job. Good night. We're off. No, it's not like that. You see? Pain and suffering belong to limited manifestation. There can be no limited manifestation whatsoever devoid of a degree of pain and misery, the physical and the psychological counterparts. Just as there can be no physical manifestation without pleasure and what we commonly call joy or happiness. So all those will be there. But when transcendence sees, hears, knows through your being, it knows not only this separate particular thing which can belong to the ambivalent world, pleasure, pain, sorrow, joy, but also is fully awake to totality, in which there is no pain, no sorrow, no joy. This is the extraordinary part of it. We cling to our concept of joy, of fulfillment, and thereby prevent the transcendent reality from entering into us. The scriptures have talked about the bliss of heaven, about the peace of God which passes understanding. Our dictionary meanings, which are the meanings in our little brains, are quite misleading with regard to the nature of that ananda, bliss, of that peace which passes understanding. That bliss you will experience here and now, if and when those wonderful heaven-sent moments come, when you are suddenly in tune with the transcendent real. And in mind and consciousness, you vibrate perfectly in harmony with the creative pulse of life itself. And in those moments, you will realize suddenly that life and what we call death are like the two limbs of your own single body. You don't, therefore, once you realize that, you don't seek immortality or strive to assure yourself of a place in the hereafter. Because in the realization of totality, in the experiencing, this conscious experiencing of immortality, the words hereafter or what went before have no meaning whatsoever. The totality is the totality. What hereafter is there? The here now, the immediate here now is the reality. And the immediate here now is the one total reality. All this comes into being, into actual manifestation, in the state of communion. And then, if you are the perfected Holy One, you will see that it is impossible to avoid being a benediction to the world in which you live.